About a year ago, we connected with a new client, new member here at Carrot. And he's one of the most passionate, action-taking, just hustlers that you'll find out there. And I was so impressed. He joined Carrot a week or two later, maybe 3 weeks later. He was up here in Oregon at our Carrot HQ for the very first Carrot Camp. And it was just really, really amazing. And I was crazy impressed seeing what he'd been doing in Dallas, Texas, as a solo operator, using some crazy creative marketing. You're going to be hearing about some of that marketing here on this call. But that's not the end story. When I was down in Dallas a few months ago, I met him and his two business partners. And since the time I'd first met him about a year ago, almost a year ago to this week that I record this, he formed a partnership with two other local investors. And since then, they've really scaled up their business in a big way, and they've done it by carving out a niche to where they can close deals that most other investors in their market can't. They have other investors sending them deals all the time that say, hey, we can't figure out how to make this a deal, and they make them deals. There's one deal that he talks about on this podcast where the person was going through foreclosure. He was able to help save the house. They stayed in the house, and he gave them money, like 20 grand or whatever it was, for her daughter's wedding. And not just that, they're going to end up making a really, really, really big payday at the end of this because they were creative with their deals. So that was a deal that everyone else looked at and said, there's nothing here. And he turned it into a $30,000 plus payday and helped the seller in a big way. And that seller's just eternally grateful. So I want to introduce you to Tang Nguyen and his business partners with the Odd Brothers in Dallas, Texas. Okay, Fred and Eric are his business partners, are amazing dudes as well. And listen to their story. Be inspired by how they saw collaboration, not competition, with other people in their market. See how they're being creative and thinking about deals in different ways. And when we're entering a tighter market, you need to be more creative with your deals. You need to find ways to collaborate with other investors, not be competition with them. And shift that mindset, y'all. This is a collaborative industry. When you look at your competition as competition and not as collaboration, that's when it gets really, really hard. Okay, that's when you're kind of out on an island by yourself. But they get emails and text messages every single day from local wholesalers and flippers who say, man, I've got this deal. I don't know how to structure it. Is this something you can handle? All right, so introducing Tang Nguyen, Fred, and Eric from the Odd Brothers. And amazing, amazing story. Dive in. Hey guys and gals, Trevor here with Carrot. I'm crazy pumped about today's episode of the Carrot Cast. I had a chance to meet these three guys down in Dallas when we were there, shoot, about a month ago for an event. And I met Tang about a year ago up here in Oregon for the first Carrot Camp. And it was just such a pleasure to meet Eric and Fred also, because they're a part of this trio. We'll introduce you what their company name is, how they formed, and what they're doing that's really, really cool. Dude, I'll find a lot of things on Facebook when you guys post things about your deals. I'm like, how did they get into that situation with that dealer? Man, that deal is crazy. You guys have so many funny stories and interesting stories of deals that you've been able to close that other investors haven't been able to close. So I want to welcome in the Odd Brothers, Eric, Fred, and Tang into this episode of the Carrot Cast. And guys, welcome. Thanks for hopping on.
What's up?
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So we'll start off just kind of giving people some perspective on your business. So, you know, where are you guys at, you know, location wise? What's your business look like? It looks like you guys, of course, you're three business partners, but do you have any other team members? And anything else about the business, we'll kind of set the foundation there.
All right. Well, we're in the Fort Worth DFW area here in Texas. You know, obviously, it's the three of us in the business. We've got a digital marketer that helps with some of our Facebook and other marketing there. We've got an administrative assistant that we just hired 2 weeks ago, and she's going to handle a lot of our closings and our transactions there to free us up to do a little bit more. What do we got? We've got a couple cold callers and that are calling for us about 20 hours a week each. Cool. And then we've got some VAs that are constantly pulling data.
Cool.
So I
love it. So you guys have a fully built out team, which is cool. And then kind of what's the volume look like? I know you guys do a lot of deals that aren't the traditional kind of kind of deal. So, you know, volume isn't always apples to apples when you look in other markets, but kind of what's your volume look like and what are the primary types of deals you guys are trying to take down?
So volume, it fluctuates, but we're averaging at least 10 a month.
Cool.
We've hit 15, close to 15 certain months. It just varies, but of course the deals are different as well. Mm-hmm. It's not all wholesale. We have an array of deals. Like I think today alone, we got five this week, three today, and it's all going to be different. Every single one is a different strategy. One's a wholesale, one's going to be a fix and flip, and one's going to be a hotel. So it's just whatever comes in, we dissect it. We got three heads in it looking at the deal, making sure we can come up with the best strategy possible and the one that is going to make the most and that can fit at that time. So
that's one of the parts about having, sorry, Trevor,
no,
but that's what it's about having all three of us is, and that's what we like to do is look at the deal and, you know, one of us may be thinking about it this way and we can say, well that way works, but what if we change our exit strategy a little bit by doing this and we can figure out the way to optimize and make the most money from every deal.
Dude, that's such a good point. I want to unpack that a little bit because I know you guys made a shift in your own businesses this past year and you joined forces. And I think it's really interesting. I want everyone listening to the Carrot Cast to listen to this because especially when a market gets harder, I think a lot of people want to then go solo, go in alone. But I think a smart move is like what you guys did is where you found people with complementary skill sets and you're like, hey, maybe we can build something amazing together. So what did that look like? Because you guys haven't always been business partners. When did you guys decide to join up? How did you guys find each other? What does the business partnership look like now?
Okay, so we got married January 22nd of this year. It's pretty much a marriage. It's it's commitment to each other on this. So prior to that, we found each other in a like an educational real estate education group. And they had a mastermind group along the side, and that's how we met. We met there. It was like we all joined because of the network. They have a big network of other real estate investors, mm-hmm. and I just found the guys. You when you're in it for at least a year, you can find out who's gonna be moving and who's gonna be kicking tires, who's just dabbling in it.
Yep.
And we just found that energy between us in that group, and I was like, let's try this out. Let's take each other out on dates, lunch dates, and see where everybody their goals are and what they want to do. So we got together on January 22nd and just been rocking and rolling, learning about each other, still learning about each other, mm-hmm. still growing. So.
Yeah. So what were the three of you guys doing separately before this? What would your businesses look like and things like that?
I was doing everything solo, mm-hmm. Half and half of wholesale and the other half was a lot of owner financing.
Okay.
First year, you know, like 30 deals, second year, just a little less than 30 deals, but I worked half the year. Mm. I took off last year. That's how I was able to come out to Carrot because yep. I spent like the whole third and fourth quarter taking vacations and just relaxing and just enjoying the family because yep. the year prior, I just did nothing but grind on 2016, just grind. In 2017, I did grind and I took half the year off. But that's where I met Eric and introduced him. Just went to lunch a couple times and gave him some of my leads and deals just to take care of it while I'm gone. And mm. I was like, okay, he knows what he's doing. He can do it. He's coachable. I'm just going to keep sending him deals while I'm on the beach in Turks and Caicos and with the family and stuff. So that was awesome.
I was doing mainly wholesales, I guess, and hadn't really been doing it very long full time. I quit my full time job in the end of October, beginning November, and actually November 1st I started doing this full time. So
what were you doing in your job before?
I was I was started as a mechanic, and then I was a service supervisor for a heavy equipment company.
Cool.
So, so only 2.5 months before we kind of all joined forces. But that was what I was doing, wholesaling and working before that. So,
I love it. Fred, what were you doing, man?
I was doing a little bit of everything, doing wholesales, hotels, fix and flips, some owner finance, wraps. Never done a sub 2 though. That's where Tane came in. That's where we kind of balance each other out. So, mm-hmm. Prior to that, I was in the automotive industry for probably 7-8 years.
So you guys met at the real estate events, kind of that group that I'm assuming meets monthly or whatever it is. And you guys said, hey, seems like we get along a little bit. You started testing things out. At what point did you guys all decide, hey, it makes more sense for us to do this thing together than separately?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty much right there in January when we kind of sat down and talked, you know, during those lunches and everything.
I was coming back from all those vacations and holidays and everything. And then I went to lunch with Fred, and he came with so much energy, so pumped. And I was like, man, this guy's starting a new year, like, super pumped.
Love it.
And I'm like, I got to get back into focus mode and everything. I was like, okay, I think I need to get back into it, because he was just telling what he was doing, just laying out what he wants this year. I was like, okay, those are some major goals. Mm. So let's see if we can do that and along bringing on Eric and see if we can do what he does for Fred, but triple it, right? Mm. And try to get more volume, more deals, and just enjoying doing what we do with someone else. Because when you're alone, you can get down real quick. If some deal blows up in your face, you're like, forget this. Let's go do something else, right? Mm-hmm. You just want to blow it off. But now it's a lot of accountability. It's like you can't blow it off. You got a guy next to you that's like working just as hard, and he's pushing. If he stumbles, you got to hold him up and keep going. You mm-hmm. got to be there to help. So we're just moving. I feel like lightning speed. It's crazy now. Yeah. So.
It's such a big deal. I know a lot of people kind of, when they get into entrepreneurship, they want that rugged individualism, you know, where I get to work by myself. I can work at the kitchen table, my underwear, whatever it is. And the thing there we go. What do you guys have going on? The thing that I love the most about business is the people, you know. It's like, cause especially eventually when you hit your financial goals, all that's left is the people and the mission and the impact that you've got in the business. Otherwise, like, shoot, why am I in business anymore if we've already hit the financial goals? So did you guys find that by joining forces, you had so many more benefits? I mean, obviously you did, but so many more benefits than what you were losing. Kind of how did that weigh out for you, the benefits versus what you guys are losing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like we mentioned, a huge benefit is just being able to look at those deals with three heads instead of one. I mean, to me, that makes up for anything that we may have lost. I mean, because if I were to look at a deal and say, well, I don't know how to make this work, and maybe Fred will come in and say, man, no, we can make this flip work because we can get our costs down here by using these contractors that Fred's got, you know, awesome subcontractors that he acquired over the years. Or yeah. You know, Tang came in and said, no, man, this is going to be a good sub too because our cash flow is going to be high. But I was looking at it as a wholesale. Mm. I mean, to me, that was worth anything lost right there.
Mm-hmm. So talking about strategy-wise, that to me fascinates me. It's so cool that you guys all kind of all came in with different ways that you were doing deals and different mindsets around it. So what's your guys' break? I mean, if you had to give a breakdown, what's your breakdown right now between sub two, between wholesale, between any other strategy, if you had it, or is it pretty even across the board?
Sorry, we're looking at the board to see.
We can show you the board. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, show us the board, man. Oh my gosh.
That's awesome. One board, and then that's the other board.
I love it.
So we got a lot of boards. And it's a mixture, but honestly, it depends on where we're at financially, if we can handle, because sub two deals, they can get pretty pricey because your money's going to sit for a while.
Yep.
And so wholesale, it's like, hey, quick, let's re-up the bank, and now we can handle a handful of sub-2 owner finance deals, because those are a little longer terms. I might have to reinstate a loan that's 20 grand, put another 10 grand in, so I'm 30 in. And what if I only get 20,000 down on the down payment? Now gotcha. I'm 10,000 negative on the deal, and it's going to take me 2 years to get my money back.
Mm-hmm.
And so those, I can't do so many deals. I can only do so many, right? And until I'm tapped out. So that's why we'll have meetings every week, every month about the financials and say, okay, let's cut down on some of these. Let's start wholesaling. Let's get back our wholesale and bring back the account. So that's how we look at it.
So how do you guys decide if it's a sub-2 deal versus something else? Are there certain guidelines you look at and go, okay, once it crosses over this threshold, we consider it as a sub-2, and kind of what do those guidelines look like?
Yeah, so let's just say if it's a wholesale and we can make $30,000 now versus we might be in the hole $5,000 on a deal, but we're going to make six figures.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, it's all we make it as a group decision every time. And it's tough because when you see the numbers for owner finance and the number six figures every time, every deal you create,
yeah.
It's like so hard to wholesale, but we have to be disciplined on some deals and just say, hey, no, we just got to ship it off. You know, we got to stick to what we say. But once we build the capital, we'll go crazy. Because that's my number one strategy. I want to do as many owner finance deals as possible. So I think that was the goal when I was there year ago. I wanted 1,000 doors in 5 years. So that's still attainable, but actually moved 5 to 3 now. Or I think that's a 3-year goal now.
Cool. So as far as making, you said you might wholesale and make 30K or hold an owner finance and make six figures. How long does it take you to realize that six figures? How many years?
Typically 30 years. Okay.
Yeah.
But it takes maybe one solid month of gift wrapping, mm-hmm. as in like getting the property, getting it ready, putting a buyer in and tie it all up in a bowl and then send it off to cash flow city. Like mm-hmm. it's just going to sit in there and just cash flow. And so we're just trying to do it. I just duplicate that model.
Yeah.
So
then do you guys have a servicing company that's servicing loans on those, or do you guys do it yourself in house?
No, we use a third party servicing company.
Cool.
It's easier that way. It provides a little bit of security for the original seller, not the seller that sold it to a sub-2.
Mm-hmm.
We use it as a, like I said, it just gives them a little security to know that they're not paying us and it's going into our pocket. It's coming to us secondhand through a servicing company.
I love it. So I kind of want to break down, I want to shift the combo a little bit now. I want to break down some of the cool things we were talking about before we hit recording here, but you guys have done some wild deals lately. And every time I read them on Facebook, I'm like, whoa, what the heck? And there was like the house that burned down, and then you guys are having Crown Royal with the sellers on one of them. And like, it seems like you guys are having fun. And that's a big part of business. One of our core values is have fun and be different. And I love it because it helps you step out. Also, your guys' company name, the Odd Brothers, Fast and Friendly House Buyers. We buy houses in Texas. Let's start there. How did you guys come up with that company name? You described it briefly when we were in Dallas, but where did the Odd Brothers come from? And has that kind of played to your guys' advantage when you rebranded?
Cool. So that networking group that we attend to, there's a breakout session where you get to mingle and network with people, and then I had these two brothers that came up to me and they're like, hey, I want to get started. How should I do it? I have $30,000. Should I put it towards this education group or go market? You know? And I was like, let's go have lunch and we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
So took them out to lunch and I told them, hey, just spend the money on marketing, then get a deal and then come into this group.
Mm-hmm.
And then start, going at it. And they did. They spent the money, got Bandit Signs, got some deals, and then they joined the program. Well, their last name is Todd, T-O-D-D. So they're called the Todd Brothers. There's actually three brothers.
Yeah.
And during the meeting, it was like fast forward 2-3 months, we were up in the front of the stage, and we had a few drinks, and the Todd brother just went up there to introduce himself. I guess it's like a selfless plug.
Yeah.
About you and what you can do and provide for everybody. And we're like, well, you guys know the Todd brothers, right? Well, we're the Odd Brothers.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, they're like, that's pretty good. Like, just it was crazy. Stuck. Yeah. So it's stuck there since then. And apparently, yeah, you can tell why we're odd. But it's just, I mean, it's fun. Like, because you can't tell who's who and who's what on, like, likes and dislikes, our favorite music, or maybe our favorite food.
Yeah.
Like, you couldn't match us up.
Yeah,
it's so crazy. So that's why we like it. So
that's fun. Do you guys, when you guys work with sellers, do you guys ever get any people to bring up your company name or ask about that? Like, is that a curiosity point for them?
I don't think so yet. We're definitely getting that name known a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have people that call us because they've heard about us.
Yeah.
So it's getting out there a little bit. Trying to do as much as we can there.
I love it, man. Dude, the thing I love about it is so many people, and it's common, it's really common, there's nothing wrong with it, but so many people start off by trying to name the company this really pretty generic thing. You know, it's like Dallas House Sellers or Dallas House Buyers or something like that. It's a good name. Like, it's descriptive and things like that. But when a market gets really competitive, something like what you guys have done, the Odd Brothers, you've got your cartoons of each of you guys up on your website. Like, it stands out. There's no other company in town that has a company name like that. And to me, it's like, it's immediate. When they talk about the Odd Brothers, everyone knows who that is. Versus if you say, oh, the Dallas House Buying Company, everyone's like, I don't know who that is. There's like 1,000 of them there, you know? So I think that has and will continue to play to your guys' advantage, which I love. So one thing that I'm always really, really impressed about, and I love, because we try to do the same things here with Carrot, is really love on our clients. And really, I was at a mastermind about a year ago, and this is an amazing mastermind. I asked everyone in that room, because you could tell they were all really looking at the numbers. They're all really looking at the numbers, the goals, how many deals we do. Everyone kind of walks in there like a peacock and stuff like that. And the bummer was, when you go and talk with people outside of the event in grabbing a drink or something like that, everyone felt a little bit empty. And I think a lot of it was because they didn't really enjoy the client that they were working with. And so I asked everyone at the front of the room, I said, by raise of hands, who in here would love to have a beer with your average client? And there are 35 guys in the room, really successful people. Two people raised their hands, me and someone else. And I'm like, man, that's part of it. Like, that's part of what's wrong is, when we grow these big businesses, if we don't grow them around clients that we love and a client avatar that we love and we want to hang out with, it makes business really hard to want to continue to grow it. And so what have you guys done to really show more love and show more connection with your client? At least from the outside in, it looks like you guys have more than the average investor by far. So what do you guys do to really show that client that you care and to give them a better experience?
I'll let you think about it, but for me, it's about building rapport with that client. Mm-hmm. Whether you fully understand or empathize with their situation or not, if you can, just hit home on a couple points and maybe find a few different points of common ground. Mm-hmm. And really build that rapport, that's going to go a long way, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and figure out what their need is on the deal, because everybody that's selling a house is selling a house for a reason.
Yeah.
And you can't just go in thinking that they're selling a house because they want the money.
Mm.
I think that's where a lot of investors make a mistake, and if you go in and you really sit and listen to those people that you're buying a house from, or you're trying to make an offer, that's going to mean a lot more in most cases than just going in and being the highest number.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, definitely that rapport. Like I mentioned to Trevor, like last year at the Carrot Camp, my note taking is all about them before the house.
Mm.
That's all I'm taking. Like, you see my notes when I'm at a house, has nothing to do with the bedroom, nothing to do with what's leaking or whatever. I take more of, like, what's the dog's name? How many kids they have? I mean, I'm going deep into to that client, and just to get to know them, and then figure it out, right? Then everything's kind of open up.
Yeah.
They're more open to explaining anything, whatever you want to know about the house or whatever, because they already opened up with everything in their lives, and you can relate on certain items. And just last month, we've helped a client pay for her daughter's wedding and kept her in the house, kept the client in the house. It wasn't that she wanted to sell. It's because there was a different need.
Yeah.
And so
she had a wedding to pay for.
Yeah, she had a wedding to pay for. You know, and once at the end of this, it's pretty much a partnership with her, because we're relying on her to follow through on what we agreed upon. And coming February, she might be a hard money lender. That's crazy. Like, nobody would think that.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks, oh, they're going in foreclosure, they're losing the house, they're just write them off. She's gonna be a hard money lender. That's insane. Yeah. But nobody saw that. Another investor brought that to me because he couldn't do anything with it. They had two or three other investors. Nobody could do anything with it. And then we got in and we got it done. So
can you guys break down? Because I'm sure a lot of people are listening to this going, so they paid for a wedding, they kept them in the house, and now she's potentially going to be a hard money lender. So, like, how does that transaction? How did you guys structure that transaction? Like, technically.
So I listened to her needs, and she gave me a list of everything she's going through, and pretty much she's in oil and gas. She has a good job, just that she had a divorce, and in a divorce decree that she had to give up part of her equity in the house. And then the bad thing on the side is the ex-husband demanded a kind of
black. He put a lien on the property for an extra $20,000.
Oh, no kidding.
But she was advised not to pay it. She knew that he wouldn't go away if she didn't. So she paid an extra $20,000 just to get the lien off and make him go away.
Oh, yeah. Wow. And then that $20,000 caused her to get behind on payments, which was right around that number. And so she was like, I'm losing this house in 2 weeks. And the same time, I don't want to lose this house. I'm trying to keep this house, but I have so much coming up ahead, and it's just time. So she needed the time. So we came in and I showed her what, and then now we're talking about the numbers. I was like, okay, well, let's see what the house is worth. Let's see what we agreed upon on the buy price, right? And how do we structure it? Yeah, so what we agreed upon on the buy price and what you owe. So I think she owed $220, right? And then $220, and we're gonna buy at $250, a little less than $250. So it's about
She ended up getting around $26,000.
Yeah, $26,000 in her pocket. Okay. Right. So to protect us, we're like, okay, so what can you pay monthly to stay in this house? Because if you stay in this house or go somewhere else, you got to pay rent or mortgage, right? Mm-hmm. So what can you afford monthly? And she said, I can afford $2,000 a month. The monthly mortgage was $1,700 a month. So I was like, okay, if you can afford $2,000 a month, I will withhold. I'll pay the next 6 months for you. So the $26,000 I was going to give you, I'll hold, $12,000.
Okay.
So really, I held that and to make sure her monthly mortgage is paid for.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because she was in a loan modification. So loan modification, they allow you to make 3 on-time payments. So there was a repayment amount of $24,000, right? Mm-hmm. She had to pay that off if she but they granted her a loan modification. So that gives her, if she can make 3 monthly payments on time, they'll take that $24,000 and put it on the back end of the loan.
Oh, I gotcha.
So
cool.
She doesn't have to come up with $24,000 right then and there.
Mm.
And so all I had to do was make all on-time payments. So I used the funds, the $26,000, I used it to pay. And then the rest I gave to her for the wedding that she needed for her daughter. And so...
And in six months...
Oh,
yeah. Well, it's six. No, that's fine. In 6 months, she's agreed to purchase the property back from us. And what did we put in there to secure that? I forget.
Well, she's purchasing at the property at full value retail. Yeah, retail price.
Okay.
Because that's what we told her. Say, this is the market value, correct? And she said yes. okay, so you will buy this house back at the full market. So yes, because if you can help me in this situation, I will buy back the house. And it blew my mind. I was like, you understand like what we're about to do, right? She's like, yes, I'm willing to do that because I love my kids. This is the house I grew, they grew up in, and I'm going to keep this. This is going to go to them.
Yeah.
And I, of course, you got to ask how, why, right? So how are you going to do this? How are you going to make this payment? And then she told us what's going on with her. So
yeah, with her oil and gas investments and yeah, everything there. So
and so she's her new boyfriend, I guess, has million-dollar contracts with oil and gas, and she, him, and them too. They're getting ready to do a business together where they're doing oil rigs. So sorry, oil rigs, and they're just sorry. I'm a little nervous still. So yeah, they're about to get a pretty big contract. He's retiring too at the end of the year, so they'll be able to buy it back cash.
Oh, easy. Really? Okay. Yeah. That was another question that's popping up in my mind. It's like, if she's behind on payments, she's probably not going to be able to get a loan, so they're buying it cash. Is there any, I guess, what happens if they don't? They just keep paying rent to you guys? And
no, so we put in a lease option in there. Mm-hmm. So they have the option to purchase it at that time. Okay. If they don't buy it at that price at that time, then we just get the property back during that time. Mm-hmm. Or renegotiate. Well, there's always...
So as part of the closing, we got the deed to the property. So we technically own it. Mm-hmm. And it is a lease option as just a protection. So they have the option to buy it back in 6 months. If they don't, then it's our house.
So do you guys have any, I love kind of breaking stuff down like this, because especially in a competitive market like right now, one of the ways that people can actually crack through some of that competition is by being more creative with their deals. And you guys are probably among the most creative investors that I know that are doing some really cool stuff. So do you have any other examples that kind of pop up in your mind? Maybe another example that is like, man, this is one that a lot of people brought to us. They couldn't get it done. A bunch of investors couldn't do it, but we came in and did it.
That was the one that we resold back to them. They stayed in it.
Oh.
When my mother died or the father died.
Oh.
We had a...
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, so we actually... So we got a contract on my birthday, which was pretty cool. And that one, we were actually purchasing it subject to the existing mortgage. It was a reverse mortgage, but the bank was willing to keep it going as long as the payments were being made. So we had everything set up. We had actually closed on our front end, and we call it the front end. So we took possession of the property. The seller still owned or still lived in the house with a temporary residential lease back that was signed. And they had a new house that was all set up. They were getting ready to move to it. And a few things came up on their credit, I believe, that didn't pan out for their house. I think they could have fixed them, but that made them stop and think. They had some pretty deep connections with the property they were in. They lost her mother and one of their children in that house.
Oh, wow.
And so they, at first, that's what they wanted to do was leave. Mm-hmm. Once it came down to leaving, they didn't want to leave. So they actually had some money saved up for a down payment for their new house, which was news to us after we had purchased the house. So they had the money to put the down payment down to buy the house back from us. Now, we couldn't legally sell it back to her because it was in her name to start with. So we put it back in her husband's name and was able to sell it back to them where they can stay in the house. And they've made payments on time ever since. So that was by far a interesting one on, you know, the fact that they were going to move out. We bought it sub two, and then we just ended up selling it right back to them.
So a lot of these deals that other investors, I'm not sure if another investor gave you guys that one, but a lot of the ones that they are coming to you guys with, does the solution tend to be a sub two deal? And a lot of people just don't know how to do it, or is it kind of run the gamut where they're just kind of not thinking creatively enough?
Actually, some are not thinking creative enough, and some are not doing their homework, actually. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We had one where an investor brought us the deal. He ran the numbers. And of course, usually the new wholesalers, they got high ARV, low repair costs, right? Mm-hmm. Well, Glengarry. So an investor brought to us and said, hey, I think the ARV is only about 170 and the repairs are 50,000, right? And the purchase was, I don't know, like 90,000. So it would have been a kind of tight deal for a flip. But then we were like, well, let's look at it. We looked at it, ran comps. We're like, oh, this ARV is not 170. This ARV is 220.
Oh, no kidding.
50,000 off. Yeah. And so we're like, okay, hey, we'll take the deal. How about, you know, we'll split the deal with you. Mm-hmm. And so we got it at 90. I think we spent $300 cleaning the house.
Yeah.
That's all we did. We cleaned the house.
Yeah.
The houses in the area were selling for ridiculous numbers as is without doing any repairs. Hmm. So there was, we would have made the same, or I think we would actually made less.
We rehabbed it.
Mm-hmm. So we just cleaned it, put it back on the market for 140, and it sold for 155.
Yeah.
Or 155. Huh.
We made $64,000 on that one. Somebody didn't know what to do with.
Yeah, all we did was clean it up. That's it.
And so he didn't have his numbers. He came to you guys. He had numbers, but they weren't the accurate ones. He came to you guys. You guys knew the numbers better, and all of a sudden it made it to where it's like, whoa, this is either really tight and it's going to be tough to get it done, to this is a slam dunk deal that you guys can get done quick.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I love it, man. It's like, thinking of that kind of stuff right there, because you have these sellers out there that are struggling to, for one reason or another, with this house, and having guys like you out there able to structure these and get creative with it. I mean, at the end of the day, it's helping more people get what they need out of their home solution rather than having to have it be foreclosed on or something like that. So I love what you guys are doing, and it pumps me up that you guys are able to partner with a bunch of investors there. And you guys are building that name. Like I said, you guys are building that name. So how often would you guys think that you're getting deals sent your way from other people in that market? Because they're like, hey, these are the guys who can get the hard deals done. How often? Is it every day, every week?
It's every day now. Yeah. It's every day, once or twice a day. Like right before we jumped on this Carrotcast, I showed Trevor the phone, and another one popped in my phone like, as soon as right when we got started. So yeah, it's coming in every day, especially this week. Like I said, it's foreclosure week. I prep myself on Mondays, but I'm never prepared because it's
it's a crazy week.
It's a long, crazy week. So so we're almost at the end. So, and I can't wait for next Monday for RJ Bates golf.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so we'll be there.
The charity event. I'm pumped for that, man. When we were at the Investor Fuel Mastermind, him and Cassie had a chance to talk about what they're doing, and man, the nonprofit that they have, I never even knew about it before then, and it's just so cool what they're doing. And there was one specific scenario where a person came to them, and I don't remember the exact scenario with the child, but I think the child had cancer or something like that. And well, it's Kids Beat Cancer, right? That's the charity name. So the child had cancer, and the house actually had a tax lien on it or something like that, where they were behind on taxes, and it was only like $2,000 or $3,000 to pay it off, but they were starting to get hounded by the city and a bunch of stuff. And they came to his charity, and we raised all that money in like 10 minutes in that room. And it was just so cool. And it was just so cool seeing, okay, if someone grows a business, but then how do you step outside of just a transaction? How do you step outside of just a business and go, I'm going to use this influence. I'm going to use this thing that we're building to impact people's lives in great ways. So I'm pumped. You guys are going to be at the golf tournament. That's awesome. Yeah. That's really cool. So I want to talk about lead gen a little bit for you guys, because I know you guys are going to close, it sounds like 100 plus deals this year. What's kind of the breakdown? Where are you guys getting your leads? Where are you guys getting your deals? What's working right now? And on the last part of it, are there things that have been working that are starting to slow down for you now?
Go ahead.
I mean, right now, our lead generation is pretty much, it's a lot of social media and people bringing us the deals, like we were just talking about. We watch a lot of the wholesale deals that are sent out, and then Tang's always on social media looking for the deals that people are putting out there as well. So I would say a good half to a third of them come from there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a good amount. The other marketing that we're doing is cold calling, which we're just starting to get moving. I think we've got maybe one or two from there so far, and then our PPC campaign. We occasionally throw out a marketing campaign for door hangers. We used to be big on bandit signs, but we've slowed down, but we still do, you know, a quick bandit sign campaign every once in a while just to see what we can get from it or not. So it's a little bit of everything. It's actually a lot, but those are kind of our main focus.
Tang, are you still doing up in Care Camp? You were like putting stickers in back of windows and stuff like that. Are you guys still doing any of that stuff, the car bandit signs?
I actually slowed down on that, but I got two calls the last 2 days. Oh, today's call was from Louisiana.
Yeah.
One of my car is in Louisiana right now, and it's going to be a sub. It looks like a sub 2 deal. Yeah, I was like,
in Louisiana,
but I'll make it happen. It's in Louisiana Tech town. So I was like, why is my car doing way out there? Like, oh, wow. I'll take it. Yeah. So, and it still works. So I'm about to put some more stickers on actually today. So
that to me kind of goes back to the whole creativity side of things, you know, where a lot of investors, they just do the kind of cut and paste. I'm just going to do the same thing over and over again, and they don't try the things that are creative. And that's one thing I love about all three of you guys is you guys all three think creatively, but kind of from a different angle of it. And with that strategy, when you explain it to us at Care Camp, I'm like, it's so simple, but it's like no one's doing that. And it's really, really smart. Yeah. And so why don't you just explain to people what you're doing with cars anyway?
Oh, so bandit sign on wheels. That was something I learned from a gentleman out of Phoenix, and I just took it and just scaled it. So what it is just a decal on the car that says, you know, we buy houses, with a phone number and an extension, and that extension is connected to the car. So every car has an extension number. So I know when the callers come in, they'll tell me, or they'll dial in, hey, what's the extension? They'll dial that extension in, and I'll know which vehicle to compensate. So I know who's working, who's driving, who's out there, and I also know who's getting in trouble, too, because, you know, you can't control the cars, you know, whether they want to speed or do whatever, that, you know, that's them. Yep. So, but that's what was bringing in leads at the beginning when I first started. I made it a goal, because when I first started, I had to get the phones to ring. So I just spent a good 2-3 months putting nothing but stickers on cars. So that's all I did. And then the call started coming in. I'm like, okay, it's finally working. So I spent the first 3 months not really worrying, like learning about real estate, but putting stickers on cars every day.
Yeah.
Booking appointments instead of for a house, I booked to put decals on cars for like a good 3 months. And that's all I did. And I got up to like 400 cars at one point, and then, you know, some took it off because it's commission based.
Yeah.
I let them know that it's commission based. So, you know, some cars are worth more than some cars sitting in the gas station, busy gas station, worth more than one in the garage. So I found that out through testing, a lot of testing, because first I wanted to put one on every car possible, and then but I can't do that. and the cars are not producing. So, and you can tell because I track the numbers and I can see when calls come in. And it's like, this guy had a decal on for 3 months and hadn't gotten one call. And this guy had 10 calls and it's only been a month. So I know who my superstars are and make sure I compensate them. So,
dude, that's cool. I love it. Last little part on this episode of the podcast. I know you guys are nearing the end of your day in foreclosure week, but the business partnership thing is something that's came up quite a bit just in conversation I've had with other people. And what are some of the things that you guys have had some struggles with as business partners? Because you guys are in that first year, you have different personalities, you work in different ways. What are some struggles you guys are having? And then what advice would you give people that are looking to form a business partnership with someone that has worked for you guys for communication or for whatever it is, but what struggles have you had and what is working to make sure you guys work really, really well together?
So starting off, I would say some of the struggles is just finding how to best work together. I mean, because when we first came together, we just kept doing what we were doing, but all together. So it worked for a little while, but then we noticed, like, we'd be doing all these different deals, and, you know, Tang may know everything about one, or Fred may know everything about the other one, you know, but nobody knew anything about all of them. Mm. And that was kind of a big struggle, because if somebody was out, you know, the point of working together is to be able to take over and be able to handle all those deals and those situations for everybody else. So in the last, I don't know, 2 or 3 months, we were recommended a book called Traction by Gino Wickman.
Yep. Yep.
From a few different investors. And we've kind of started running through that process. We've really defined our roles, which we did a little bit before starting the book, but this really helped us hit on it. Mm. And so defining those roles and keeping everybody working, you know, in their niche and their comfort zone on what it is that they're good at, has helped us, you know, kind of jump up and do some more deals and be a lot more organized. So I guess some advice would be just to, you know, if it doesn't work right in the beginning, you know, just take the time to reevaluate and maybe figure out why it's not working. Don't give up and just say, well, partnerships don't work. You know, figure out why or what you can do to change it and make it work, because there's ways.
Who on your guys' team is more of a follow through person? Like, hey, they just get bugged by having half read books done. They get bugged, like, they've got to have a checklist, and they're really good at pushing it past the finish line. And who on right there? Everyone's pointing Eric. And then Fred and Tang, are you guys kind of more quick starts? Your idea people, you're okay with having a bunch of stuff kind of halfway done and stuff? Okay.
Yeah, I'm more of a visionary, just more of like, yeah, ideas and just, yeah, a whole bunch of ideas. I always have ideas. Too many ideas sometimes. Yeah. It's like ideas on top of ideas. It's like, but we came with some, when I tell them the ideas and then we finally break it down together and then we come up with something like
that works.
It's like, oh, that's amazing. So yeah.
So I guess, but between us, what we really try and focus on is Tang, is more in the PR and marketing, you know, some of that, those social media relationships, the larger relationships that we need as a business, as well as, you know, finding the majority of deals and then marketing a lot of them. Fred handles a lot of the operations. You know, he's great with the contractors and GCs, like I mentioned before, and you know, knows the rehab process probably better than either of us. So, and then I'm kind of the working the business and try and collaborate it all between everybody and keep us, you know, working and using the CRMs and everything that we need to there.
So. So that right there is why it's working. I want everyone who's listening to this or watching this on YouTube to recognize this partnership here, because you can get in partnership with people who are awesome that you love. I've done that before where Chris Brisson, I've mentioned him a bunch in the Carrot Cast, good friend of mine, his family was out at our house about a month ago for a week, but we're not good business partners together because we're like the exact same person. You know, there are ideas everywhere and then nothing got done. And neither one of us were willing to take the back seat and kind of be the number two. And it was just amazing. Now with Carrot, it's just different. You know, we've learned, okay, well, shoot, there's got to be the yin to the yang. There's got to be the person who's willing and able to, and they love being able to organize and push things forward. That's where their unique ability and their unique genius is. And there's got to be the big vision to help pull people up and like, hey, let's think a little bit bigger. Are we not thinking big enough? And during some of that, just like with anything, you take a rubber band, you stretch it far enough where someone's kind of trying to anchor you and keep it down here and like, hey, let's make sure we're doing what we've set out to do. And then someone else is pulling up there. If you pull it too far, the rubber band breaks. And so it's all about just kind of contraction and coming back together and having the right systems, like you guys said, and the right communication process and cadence and understanding how each other think. So when you have a disagreement, you know how to work through it, and there's no blood and stuff around the office, you know, fighting through it. Like, you guys might be passionate about your stance, but then you come to an end that works for the business because you guys are all focused on the same thing. You want to see a great end for your guys' company and contribute. So I'm pumped about what you guys are doing. Last question for you, the market. I know the market's been hot. What are you guys seeing down in Dallas, and are you guys going to be changing your strategy any in the next 12 months based on what you see in the market?
definitely changing strategy, but not really based on the market. We're just trying to grow into the new builds and the multifamily. So that's kind of our change. It doesn't really have to do with the market. We're just growing into new business.
Cool. Yeah. So the rental market is ridiculous. The price is awesome. So we're looking at cash flow. We're looking at building, like fourplexes, quadplexes, something more affordable than the new high-rise apartments, the A-class or whatever. So we know the rental markets, so we know how to price it right, and it's going to stay 100%. So that's what we're looking at.
Cool.
Yeah.
I love it.
We do see the higher-end homes, 400,000 plus here is a little bit on the upper end, and they tend to be sitting a little bit longer now. So if anything, I don't know that we're changing our strategy. Like Fred said, we're not really changing much. We're just not really, if that opportunity comes up for a house in that price range where it may be a flip or a rehab, we're not getting into those. Mm-hmm. So not really changing much, just not really just hitting those ones that are sitting longer. So staying in the lower price range too that are selling fast.
So are you guys, I mean, you guys are probably in the market where there's more Carrot customers than any other market out there. And one kind of objection we'll have, you know, from people is like, hey, there's 8 million Carrot customers in this market. And it's not just about Carrot customers either. It's about competition. There's a bajillion investors in Dallas-Fort Worth. So one thing I want people to really look at with this podcast is these guys have formed a company. They were technically competitors before, right? Technically. Now they're one company, and now they're collaborating with so many other investors in that market, and a third to half of their deals come from other investors. So I want people to really listen to that and recognize that when you take it from a collaborative approach, and there's a big pie, and we're going to kind of share, and there's enough for everybody, you can do it and grow an amazing business. And also these guys, I was just pulling up the site that we've been working on with you, and you guys are number three in Google now for Selling House Fast Dallas. You guys overcame Express Home Buyers in the last week, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Nice.
So hopefully that keeps marching up. But same thing, that site for you guys is new within the past 6 or 7 months. And it just really, really depends on how people out execute the competition. So I'm just really proud of all that you guys are doing to give an amazing name for investors in Dallas and around the country. Collaboration, helping sellers out of sticky situations, and not just, hey, does this fit in my box and let me leave the seller hanging. And also just I'm pumped about what the future is for you guys, because you guys are still kind of in the honeymoon phase that first year in a business partnership, and I'm excited to see what happens when things break a little bit, because they will, and see how you guys get through it. I know you'll do great, and I'm just pumped about your next phase. It's really, really exciting.
Thank you very much.
So where can people find you guys? Where can people follow you guys online or even connect with you if they've got a deal to send your way?
Well, they can call us for one at 817-482-9444.
Cool.
Again, that's 817-482-9444. Our website is cashoffersdallas.com. You can also reach us via email at info@fweinvest.com.
Cool.
And pretty much
how else you find Tang on social media?
Yeah.
That's right. Well, cool, guys. I appreciate the heck out of you guys. Once again, enjoy your families and in your weekend this weekend. Don't work too hard this weekend. Take a break and enjoy. But I appreciate that, guy. You guys, everyone listen to this episode of the podcast. Take away those lessons that the Odd Brothers shared today. You know, collaborate with people in your market. Business can be way more fun when you do it with people instead of by yourself. And go out there and find a niche where you can solve problems for sellers better than anyone else. And while everyone else is out there paying to generate leads in different ways, they're now sending them to you guys because you can solve the problems for them. That's what creative real estate's about. And these guys are the epitome of it. So thank you guys. Have an amazing rest of the week. And everyone listening, please go rate and review the Carrot Cast. We would love if you enjoyed this episode and what these guys had to share in their story. Please rate and review. Give them a shout out on social media, and we'll talk soon. Thank you.